Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, God bless you, Blood River Radio family. Thank you so much for hanging on. Just a quick announcement here, just in case you're just coming in. Yesterday, December the 16th, was the 183rd anniversary of the Day of the Vow, of the Battle of Blood River, which this radio program is named after, Blood River Radio, the Boer Trekkers there. So we're going to do a big show. The first of the year, we'll be going to 3 hours the first of the year, January 7th, we're on schedule, if we keep schedule. And so we're going to have a big program. But tonight, I just wanted you to make sure y'all knew that. We're not forgetting the Day of the Vow. We want to do a time where we can give them more, more justice, what they deserve. And it slipped up on me. I didn't have time to prepare, and we had other stuff. But anyway, that's what's going on. But tonight, guess what, y'all? What a treat. Guess who's back? The Bitter Ender himself. He's back. He'd been fighting behind enemy lines. I think that the Yankees, though, they've got, so they've got war crimes against him now, charges. But, he had to get back here because they can't touch him. The Yankee courts are not effective here. So General Forrest is begging General Lee. We need him bad, man. But General Lee hated to turn him loose. But after we begged him so bad with crying crocodile tears, they sent a Bitter Ender back here. But we had to promise we'd supply him with swords because damn guy's hard on a sword. He keeps tearing his damn swords up. But anyway, the Bitter Ender himself is back tonight. Thank God. Hallelujah. How you doing tonight, Bitter Ender?
I'm doing okay. And after that, there are radios all over the country clicking off right now.
I bet you Sister Nancy's clicking off. We got old Sister Nancy. She's fired tonight, too,
she'll
buddy.
Keep them going. She will definitely keep them going. That young lady is a firebrand if there ever was one. She'll keep things stirred up. So glad to be back,
hour.
Eddie. Really, this last month or almost 2 months, seems like every weekend we had something going on. Way back, tell a couple of stories here if it's all right.
Sure.
Saturday, October 29th, our Sons of Confederate Veterans Camp made a road trip down to Atlanta to see the Cyclorama, the big round painting. They moved it from downtown Atlanta out of darkest Africa and got it up to the Atlanta Historical Society on West Paces Ferry Road. And really, really, they did a good job restoring the painting and got a new modern building, and it's more climate controlled. And they also have the steam engine, the Texas, that was in the great locomotive chase that the Confederates used, ran that thing about 60 or 70 miles an hour backwards up the railroad toward Chattanooga to chase down the Yankees that had stolen the train, and they were going to try to burn the timbers in the tunnels and the bridges. And the Confederates stayed on them so fast they couldn't do it and finally caught them. But they have that there. The only bad thing about it was, if you go, you got to put up with this politically correct video garbage that they have. Of course, it's Atlanta, and they got to show this. And they show it up on the painting itself, up in the sky, and it's about a 20-minute video presentation. And, of course, the southern guy looks like Boss Hog and just, real redneck kind of disparaging type of portrayal in his little speech. But then they have this super educated college professor type black that comes on and tells everybody that the war was about slavery and what a great contribution the USCTs, United States Colored Troops, made. And they had all those pictures and everything. Well, the USCTs weren't in the Battle of Atlanta. The only black troops in the Battle of Atlanta were in the Confederate Army, but they don't tell you that. And so our people were in the crowd. Of course, it's dark where we're standing watching all this mess up on the screen. And our people are going, oh, no, come on, that's garbage. They weren't in Atlanta. They're just cutting this guy down. And I guess they were Yankees that were around us. They all kind of moved away from us. Like they thought we were going to get up there and tear up the projector or beat up the guy that was running the projector. So anyway, but they did do a good job of the painting, getting that restored, and a lot of the history about it. The cycloramas, and there were three of them that were done. There was one on the Battle of Atlanta, the one on Gettysburg, and the Gettysburg one is up there at that museum in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. And then there was another one that they did on Missionary Ridge. And, of course, they were painted in Milwaukee, and they hired these German artists to come over and do it. And it's paid for by the Yankees. Of course, the South didn't have any money in the 1880s to do anything like that. I mean, they couldn't even pay for a postcard, much less a huge thing like that. And so they're all, you know, glorifying the Yankee Army and what all they did. But they got paid back. The one on Missionary Ridge was in Nashville. And they would take these things down and roll them up and take them around the country and put them up in temporary buildings. And, of course, there's a lot of wear and tear on the canvas. And the one that was making a trip through Nashville in the early 1890s got hit by a tornado, and that's the end of it.
Damn.
So that's payback, you know. God does work in mysterious ways sometimes. So,
sure,
or Mother Nature does, anyway. So there are only two of them left, the one in Gettysburg and the one in Atlanta. So anyway, that was one of the weekends. And another interesting one was on the 12th of November. We had a bunch of Cub Scouts that came out and camped out at the Forest Home there in Chapel Hill. And that was the night it got down to 27 degrees. And a lot of them ate dinner and then left and went home. But I got up. I stayed in the Forest House that night and got up the next morning. There were still 7 tents out there in the field. And then they had a few more that came back for breakfast Sunday morning. But we enjoy having the scouts out there because they clean up. They're really good about taking care of the property. And I always give them a good Confederate history lesson, and I dress up my uniform and show them how to load a musket and then, you know, fire a couple of shots. They like all the noise and smoke from that. So that's a good bunch to have coming out there. So we really enjoy that. So anyway, that's some of the weekend events. We had a couple of Civil War shows. We had the American Renaissance Conference there at the Montgomery Bell State Park in Nashville on one Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And, of course, we had the ragtag protesters out there. But they really have a lot of highway patrol and park rangers, and with the Kevlar vests and armed to the hilt to keep the protesters away. So that's what you have to do. And the sad thing about it, you cannot have a conservative conference at a hotel or some kind of privately owned venue. You pay a down payment, a big down payment, you sign a contract, and they protest and threaten the manager, and they void the contract.
Right.
And
that's what happens. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they have to have park, because it's a felony in Tennessee to threaten a state official. So if they call up the manager for Montgomery Bell State Park and threaten them or their family, then they've committed a felony. So they have the park rangers there, and they take care of parking and making sure the ragtags stay over on another part of the park. They can protest, but they're not up there close to the inn and the restaurant and, you know, where the event's going on. So that's the type of world we live in. So anyway, so that's just sort of a number. Oh, and one other thing. This past Monday, the 12th, we finally poured the concrete slab for the visitor center at the Nathan Bedford Forest Home. And you won't believe this. This is a concrete job from hell. The concrete company, Volunteer Material, said they couldn't send their big ready-mix trucks out there. It had been raining for 2 weeks, and the ground was so soft. These things weigh about 80,000 pounds when they're full of concrete. And they said they're just going to mire up. So what you need to do is get one of those concrete pumping trucks where they just dump it in there in this big, like a crane, way, way up in the air, and the hose goes up and over, and they can spread it all over the site. And they don't have to get those trucks up close to it and get them mired up. So we got that set up the week ahead of time. It's supposed to be out there at 6:30 Monday morning. I got down there about 5:45 and got the gates open, everything ready to go. The truck's there on time, concrete pumping truck. He starts to pull up to where he's supposed to go and gets stuck in the mud. And he's sliding it back and forth and back and forth. And this thing, it weighs about 60,000 pounds, and it doesn't have four-wheel drive. So he's working it back and forth and finally gets it over to the edge of the grass area and almost rolls it over into that sinkhole that's out in front of the forest. So now he can't go forward, backward. We're afraid this thing's going to tip over. Now we've got three of those concrete trucks lined up on the driveway with a drum rolling and everything, and they're ready to pour. And they said, no, we can't pull him out because we're afraid of the liability if that thing tips over. So they had to call one of those big giant wreckers like you see out on the interstate that can pick up a semi and haul it off. They got one of those out there. He got him out, and we told the guy this time, when you get on that gravel driveway, get up some speed and get up the hill. Don't stop and spin your wheels. So he finally got to where he's supposed to go. The giant wrecker backs up to get out of there. He backs off the driveway, gets out in the mud. Now he's stuck. So we had to get one of the concrete trucks with a strap to pull the wrecker out and get him out of there. Because the driver said, "Hell, it, you know, don't even call the office. I'll get him out of there." So he pulled him out, got him on the gravel driveway. He's gone. So now we're about 3.5 hours late getting started. So they get it all poured. We had to order 3 extra trucks, truckload of concrete to finish the job. Got that done, paid for. And the concrete crew was out there working till 11:15 that night. And working in the dark. And so we had a couple of pickup trucks on either side of the site with the lights on so they could see what they were doing. And I was sitting in my pickup truck, motor running, heater on, and listening to the Nashville Predators and the St. Louis Blues hockey game from St. Louis. I listened to the whole game sitting there, and I'd move the truck a little bit to turn the headlights whichever way they needed. Like, it was a bad night. Preds lost 1-0 in overtime. But anyway, so they finally got it poured, and we were so glad to do that. That was a big milestone in our work plan down there to get all of that done now. And now we're going to sit back for the winter and not do anything out there. But we just had a few days to get it in and get it done where it wasn't raining and it wasn't freezing at night, because you can't pour concrete and then have it freeze at night because you run a risk of having it cracked. So.
Well, Gene, that's a good stopping point. Obviously, you hear the music. This is our first break, and we'll be right back with the bitter injury. He's finally back.
Small Business Tech Guys is a team of experts ready to assist you with any service relating to growing your business. Our team specializes in information and technology, social media, general consulting, and HR. We thrive on assisting startup entrepreneurs with growing their businesses. If it's small business, it's our cup of tea. To schedule your free discovery call today, consider sbtechguys.com. We keep an eye on tech, so you don't have to. sbtechguys.com.
Hey, this is Matt from Blood River Radio. Blood River Radio is your voice to save our land, our people, and our future. We propose Christian solutions to an anti-Christian assault on our bloodlines. We love what we do, but we cannot do it without your help. The annual operating cost of Blood River Radio is more than even a team of people should bear alone. With your donation, we can take the fight to our enemies and hold our own people accountable for their treachery against us. Please go to our website, www.bloodriverradio.com, and find a way to help us that is suitable for you. We are thankful for any cash, check, or money orders we get. We also appreciate your correspondence or letters of encouragement. Once again, please help, and thank you for joining the fight.
Have you ever heard of Loving Liberty Ladies? Well, the Loving Liberty Ladies are here to help you learn our American heritage and the way it affects today's society. The Loving Liberty Ladies also have a discussion guide called Proclaim Liberty. And with this guide, you can start your own group in your hometown. Get yours today on our website at lovingliberty.net. Look for our lesson supplements, too. They're free. To hear all the special offers and to join the fight for freedom and liberty, please go to lovingliberty.net.
Well, dear Blood River Radio family, I am so glad to have the Bitter Ender back. Man, I tell you what, people were pestering the crap out of us. I guess they thought we had court-martialed him or something for killing too many Yankees, you know. But yeah, we're so glad to have him back. We've had so many people want to know where he is, when's he coming back. I said, well, he's a working horse. So you just got through hearing what he's been doing. He ain't been sitting on his duff not doing anything. And we also have our precious, my older sister, Nancy, dear sister Nancy, she's on tonight. And I tell you what, people, they have more fans. I tell you that love, a lot of people love both of you people. So anyway, I'm going to shut up. Sister Nancy's got some great, great stuff to tell. And I hope she'll tell that story today. She told me it's almost like supernatural what she's going to tell us. But anyway, go ahead, Sister Nancy.
Well, I'm going to start out by talking about Nicola Marshall. Some of the listeners will remember the name because he was the designer of the first flag for the Confederacy, and which was known as the Stars and Bars, the first national flag. And I'm looking at a note, actually, that I wrote to Speed Art Museum here in Louisville, hoping that they would do an exhibition of Marshall's artwork. Now, I know this sounds like I'm going off track from Nathan Bedford Forrest, but hang on a minute. Marshall also designed the gray Confederate uniforms, and he was an excellent portrait artist. He was born in Prussia, March the 16th of 1829, and he died here in Louisville on February the 24th of 1917. He's buried at Cave Hill Cemetery on Baxter Avenue in Louisville. And he lived at a couple different locations here in Louisville, 4th Street and Brook Street. And at his grave site, there is a historical marker that does indicate that he was the artist of the Confederacy. Now, my letter to the Speed Art Museum was to encourage people I don't know if I ever got a response. This was about 2011. I was trying to get them to do an exhibition of Nicola Marshall's work. He had done portraits of the Confederate General Robert E. Lee, and they owned that portrait, and they had one of that lousy President Abraham Lincoln, too. They had a couple of other portraits those two paintings were done from photographs, not from life. The other two Marshall portraits were of Confederate Braxton Bragg and Honorable James B. Breckinridge. The Filson Club displayed some of Marshall's paintings. One of the most, the greatest likeness I ever saw of Confederate General John Cable Breckinridge was there. And what happened is, I used to attend many years ago to find out and to learn more about the Civil War. I attended the Louisville Civil War Roundtable, and I met a man by the name of Owsley Curd Coslow. I didn't know anything about him, who he was related to. He was actually the great-grandson of Nicola Marshall. Now, he donated to the Filson Club, which is a historic club here in Louisville, a scrapbook which contained originals, Marshall sketchings, and also interesting newspaper clippings. The only known portrait painted from life of Confederate General Nathan Bedford Forrest was done by Marshall. Now, my note that I wrote here is that it was on permanent display at the Tennessee State Museum in Nashville. I don't think it's there any longer. I have done some research today, and I don't know if, Gene, if you're familiar with this painting. You probably are familiar with it, but it's I don't think it's on display there. If it is, I've not been able to. I even called them, and I went on the Internet today to try to find out where it is, because it's the only painting done from life of Confederate General Nathan Bedford Forrest. Are you familiar with it, or do you know anything?
No, I am not, and that is a fascinating story. I did not know the history of this great artist. But I'm going to go right down there to the State Museum. See, they moved it from one building to another. They built a new building for a museum. And everything Confederate down there has been kind of crammed off into one corner, as I understand it. I haven't been there, but people have gone and said, you know, it's not, you know, not much Confederate stuff left there. They've all got it in storage because they don't want to offend all the Aborigines, you know, all two or three of them that actually go to a museum and try to see something. But
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. And that's where they took the bust of General Forrest out of the state capitol.
Well, and that's moved what it I read. Yeah, I just
down
read
to
that,
the state museum. And that was done by our governor, Slick Willie Lee, who promised one of our SCV members at a fundraising dinner when he was running for governor He was asked point blank, will you protect our Confederate monuments and our forest bust in the state capitol? Oh, yes, I will. Yes, 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 sir. I'll do that. Well, he, of course, like most Republicans, he gets elected and he starts crawfishing. And at the end of his first term, he got the forest bust removed from the state capitol and stuck off in a corner of the state museum. So, and it wasn't owned by the state. One of the local artists had done that. Jane Baxendale was a sculptor, and she did it. And it was paid for by the Joseph E. Johnston SCV camp in Nashville. And they presented it to the state and had it at a nice area displayed there on the second floor. And then, of course, you know, the usual suspects got all upset. And to appease them, they moved it out of there. And but that's why that governor is such a low-down line SOB that he promised he would. And then as soon as he got elected, he started coughing. And, of course, he's got it out. He said he didn't do it. The Capitol Commission did. But he appointed three blacks and a bunch of liberal turncoat whites to the Capitol Commission. And, of course, they voted to get it out of there. So Slick Willie Lee can throw up his hands and say, oh, no, no, I didn't have anything to do with it. The Capitol Commission did. But he stacked the Capitol Commission against it to get it out. And he appointed people that he knew were going to vote to get it out of there. So he ran for reelection, and the Democrats this last November didn't put up anybody to run against him. So I voted, I wrote in Nathan Bedford Forrest for governor. And we had a lot of people in the state that did. And they never announced how many write-in votes Forrest got. And we were hoping that we would have enough write-in votes for Forrest to throw the election into a tie or into the House of Representatives or something like that, or get him out of office. And the Democrat got voted in because Forrest got enough write-in votes to keep him away from Slick Willie, Bill Lee. You know, so we call him Slick Willie, like Slick Willie Clinton, you know, the lion rat.
Back to the scrapbook.
Hey, Nancy, got a quick thing for you here. Not to interrupt. You know, our buddy, Rich Hamblin, he sent us a text. He said he has a copy of that print. He said Dixie Gunworks used to sell them. I don't know. Y'all might want to look into that.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah.
I think I know which one you're talking about.
I think the print is probably – that's not my issue. My issue is where is the original? I think this print has been around for years. But I want to know what happened to the original because – we just don't know. At any rate, I don't know if I'm going to have time to read this, but what happened is when the great-grandson of Nicola Marshall donated the scrapbook to the Filson Club, and I have absolutely almost no respect for the Filson Historical Society. First of all, when they get something, they put it in the archives. It's back there. They've got it. It's in the archives. And are you going to be able to ever see it? Well, I was lucky enough to find out that it had been donated right before, right about the time they donated it, I was able to actually physically handle it. Now, I don't know if they would even let you physically handle it today. So what happened is I'm looking right now at a handwritten document by Nathan Bedford Forrest from that scrapbook.
Oh, gosh. Ooh.
That's what I'm going to send you. But I've also got another page. Now, there may be more of this in this book, in this scrapbook. But the other one is an etching of Nathan Bedford Forrest and his signature underneath it. And the artist wrote underneath his signature, received from himself. In other words, he received this card from Nathan Bedford Forrest himself. He personally received it. Now, of course, he knew Nathan Bedford Forrest because he painted Nathan Bedford Forrest from life, the only person that did, as far as I know. So I've had a lot of interest in Nicola Marshall. Not only that he's buried here, but, of course, he was an absolutely fantastic artist. He's considered one of the 500 American artists in this country. But if we can get through this, I don't know if I can read this. It's very short. No, I'll read it in the next break.
You got it, sister.
Thank you so much for all of that information.
That's amazing.
Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Dave Collins. The TSA intercepted a record number of firearms at security checkpoints this year. The agency said it recovered over 6,300 weapons, of which 88% were loaded. It's the first time the figure has surpassed 6,000, with predictions that it will rise to 6,600 interceptions by the end of next year. Kids get ready to mask up in Philly. Lance Pry has more.
The Philadelphia, Pennsylvania School District is bringing back the mandatory mask mandate to school children. The mandatory masking will be for 10 days after they return from winter break, January 3rd through the 13th. The school district claims it will lessen the transmission of multiple airborne viruses, including COVID-19.
A man fell from a top floor to his death at a supportive housing building in Times Square. It happened early this morning at the 15-story building called the Times Square at West 43rd Street near 8th Avenue. The New York Post reports it was not immediately clear whether the man jumped or fell. Is your child too young to view TikTok? Tim Berg has more.
Google and Apple are being asked to raise their age ratings for TikTok by Republican state leaders. 15 state attorneys general sent letters to the CEOs of both companies. Montana's attorney general saying the teen or 12 plus rating is too low because the app promotes drugs and alcohol use, glorifies eating disorders, and encourages illegal and dangerous challenges. I'm Tim Berg.
Thousands of volunteers are placing wreaths at the graves of fallen service members this year. Arlington National Cemetery hosted its annual Wreath Across America event. That happened today, with the public invited to place wreaths on more than 260,000 headstones on its historic grounds. More than 3,400 locations in all 50 states are participating as well. This is USA News.
So right now may be the perfect time for you to rethink how you pay for healthcare, and here's why. Not only is it open enrollment for a lot of people, it's also a time you can join MediShare and save even more than usual. And it's true, the typical family switching to MediShare saves $500 or more a month, which is obviously huge for a lot of people, but what's more, they like it. MediShare has double the customer satisfaction rate compared to health insurance. Double. There are 400,000 members, they've shared over $4 billion in medical bills, and it really is a great community too. People encourage and pray for each other. And here's the thing. If you join MediShare Complete right now, they'll waive your new member fees and you'll save an additional 10% off all of 2023. That's right. No fee to join. 10% off every month of next year. But it's a very limited time offer. You have to sign up before December 31st. Great savings. Great health care. Find out more. Call now. 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
A Venus is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off. You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
Dear Blood River Radio family, man, I tell you what, I've been so fired up tonight. You know what? We have a tremendous staff. I'm not blowing hot air. Listen, I want to salute our staff tonight. We saluted Rand earlier with, you know, Sister Nancy, the work she's done. Brother Bitter Ender, the work he's doing. I mean, he spends untold hours up there. Hard. I mean, you talk about, if you've ever worked in concrete, toting exterior grade plywood, toting rebar steel like I did when I was a kid before I got drafted, you don't know work. I mean, man, God, that is some work. But Gene, the Bitter Ender, does that free of charge. He's up there, man. He works day and night. Sister Nancy has worked, has spent untold hundreds of hours researching for us, me, for you, for our posterity, for our, you know, our culture, for our dear honored ancestors that have been dead and gone. These two people are keeping their memories alive. They're keeping the real true history, the real culture alive. This being destroyed even as we speak. I mean, you just heard that was the, you know, General A.P. Hill's statue was the last one to survive in Richmond, Virginia, the very capital of the Confederacy. If we don't have people, thank God, if it wasn't for people like Gene Andrews and Nancy Hitt, I mean, you're damn sure not going to find it in the history books. None. And you're going to hear, if we get time, I would like for, if Gene could talk about, we got so many stuff I want him to let you know that the A.P. Hill statue was not there in the Confederate Park or whatever, and the Soldiers and Sailors Monument. I think they tore it down, and also, if we may not have time, like Gene, to expand upon what he told me about the wonderful person that Abe Lincoln was, destroyed newspapers, arrested, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, sure.
Anyway,
yeah.
One more time, I'm going to salute people. Out there, I'm not trying to chastise you or anything, but we all owe a debt to these people you hear giving this history lesson tonight. The dear Sister Nancy and my brother Gene, the bitter ender. God bless you. We'll go back to you, Gene. But if you get time, Gene.
No, Nancy, she had some information she wanted to give out.
Oh, okay.
We got cut off by the break.
Sure.
So I'm going to defer to Nancy. Let her go.
I'll make it brief. One thing, I'm just heartbroken that A.P. Hill, Ambrose Powell, Hill would die just days before the war ended, like I said, many of them died that same day, I'm sure April the 2nd of 1865, and he was married to John Hunt Morgan's sister, Kitty. And of course, I'm sure that they still have that black AIDS victim, Arthur Ashe's monument, still up there being honored by the BLM and Antifa. Probably doesn't have any orange paint on it. But anyway, back to what I found in the Filson Club in the scrapbook that came from and was created actually by Nicola Marshall, the famous Confederate artist and designer of the first Confederate flag, and also he designed the Confederate uniforms. I found a note within the scrapbook that was written by Nathan Bedford Forrest. On the heading, it says Selma, Marion, and Memphis Railroad Company, Office of the Secretary and Treasurer, N.B. Forrest, President. And then it says Marion, Alabama, it looks like August the 23rd of 1870. Now, when you would travel, people would give you an introduction help you to meet people in the responsible people in different cities. And this is what Nathan Bedford Forrest was doing. The names are kind of hard to read. To A.S., it looks like A.S. Hampton, Colonel S.M. Minsky, Colonel John Billups of Columbus, Mississippi. Gentlemen, this note is to introduce to you my friend, Nicola Marshall, of this city. Mr. Marshall visits Columbus professionally as an artist. I command him to you and this citizens of said city, both as a gentleman and one skilled in his profession. Yours respectfully, Nathan Bedford Forrest. And I'm going to make sure that Gene gets that. And it's just, you know, I copied it out of the scrapbook. Lucky that I was able to handle the scrapbook. I don't even know if they would let you touch the scrapbook today. I'll tell you another little thing that happened when I tried to see a flag that was in the archives at the Filson Club, and I'd had a run-in with the director in the past over his attitude about seeing things. And I wanted to see this flag. It was a historic flag that I think had come down from the John Hunt Morgan's mother. Well, the attitude that they gave me at the Filson Club was, well, Nancy, it's in poor condition. What did I expect? I asked the fellow who was the director, and I said, how come your attitude is so poor? How many thousands of people ever want to see this flag? I said, and I know it's in bad condition. You pawn me off like this is a real imposition. What I'm getting at is when you give something to a museum, don't expect them to allow you to touch it or even see it. So the second thing I have is another page that I copied from this scrapbook, and it's an etching of Nathan Bedford Forrest, and underneath it, it has a signature of Nathan Bedford Forrest. Now, I'm not quite sure not sure that this is original, but underneath it says, received from himself, meaning that the artist received this etching and this signature on this etching of Nathan Bedford Forrest. So that's... That's what I found, and I'm going to. Well,
that's great.
That
you really did some research there.
Well, I've done quite a bit of research on Nicola Marshall, and I'll tell you later another thing that happened. It was quite a coincidence. A lot of things that I have, you know, I found a lot of unmarked graves. I put up, I don't know, innumerable VA markers, and I've had many, many memorials across, mainly in Kentucky. I even put up a marker in Albany, New York for Samuel Oscar Berry, who was in prison there after the war in Albany, New York. But anyway, maybe I can tell you briefly what happened. I was giving a very brief talk about Nicola Marshall in 2011 at the Filson Club, but it was nothing to do with the Filson Club. It was a Confederate Orphan Brigade kinsfolk meeting. And I was talking briefly about, I gave us a very short brief talk about Nicola Marshall because he was from Louisville. He's buried here. And the most unusual thing happened. A German man came into the audience, and he was also visiting Louisville, and he was very interested in knowing more about Nicola Marshall. And we actually, there's another lady there, Mrs. Bratcher, and she had the great-grandson's biography of Nicola Marshall, and we gave it to him. But that's not the end of the story. He himself lived in the town where Nicola Marshall had been born, in St. Wendel's, Germany. And guess what he did? He went back to St. Wendel's and wrote a book in German about Nicola Marshall, which I have the book. It's written in German, but it's kind of dedicated. He did dedicate it to myself and Mrs. Bratcher because of some of the work we did. But it's a magnificent, the photographs are absolutely magnificent of the paintings that Nicola Marshall did. Anyway, it was such a coincidence. How does this man come in, trying to find out about Nicola Marshall and come in when I'm speaking?
Yeah.
I mean, how did that happen? I mean, that's just,
it's like divine intervention.
What a coincidence. But that's not the only coincidence that's happened to me in my life. But anyway, that one was it went on to, he even actually had an art exhibit in St. Wendell's. He's a native of that area anyway. He was a teacher for 35 years. But he and his wife were in Louisville at some kind of German meeting, German-American Association meeting, and he was going to the various museums to try to find artwork by Nicola Marshall and came into the Filson Club when I was speaking.
Just happened to be at the right place at the right time.
How do they happen? Anyway, he produced an art exhibit in St. Wendell's, and he produced a beautiful book with photographs of these wonderful portraits that Nicola Marshall did. So there's a connection to Nathan Bedford Forrest. I'm not just too far off a rabbit hole.
No. That's very interesting. I'd not heard of him before and his artistic talent and what all he did. That's great. Some great information there. So congratulations for all your hard research that you've done. If that's the thing. If people aren't really passionate about this and digging in archives and doing all this research, all this history's lost. You know, in two generations, it's gone because people can't remember that far back or keep the name straight or what happened unless there are people that are interested in researching this and finding out the ties between Marshall and Forrest and all of the other things together there in Kentucky.
Well, with that, we'll use that last statement by the bitter ender to lead us into our last break. People, we got our last break, and we'll be right back after this. Man, this time's really gone fast. Be right back, folks.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues of the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas, like this year's Buckaroo calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Okay, listen up, people. I'm beating the bushes for a few good men. I don't want you boys the alt-right. I want the hardcore of the hard right. And I need you front and center, boots on the ground at a minute's notice, in the streets, and I need your money. You know the problem that the whites of the world face. It's the all-too-real threat of global extermination. And you know what's going on in South Africa and Western Europe. And unless you're semi-comatose, you've already seen the first stages of white genocide unfolding in our country. Our culture is under constant full-scale attack by our enemy. The enemy never sleeps. They spend day and night wrecking the monuments and the graves of our beloved kin. They attack us physically everywhere we go. They've already taken the linen and our stone. Now they're coming after our flesh. And if you're not too squeamish, if you want to be part of the number one white advocacy group and the number one white civil defense group in the United States, then contact Eddie Bombardier Miller at BloodRiverRadio.com. And please, please donate. And God knows you need us as much as we need you. Thank you.
This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpochTimes.com.
Well, dear family, it's just incredible. I know I always say this, but it seems like the time's gone in a blink. Hopefully, when we go the first of January, hopefully when we go to 3 hours, it'll solve some of our problems. But you know, when it used to be with TPC, it was the same thing. I mean, you think, damn, 3 hours, it couldn't possibly be gone. But we're gonna, hopefully we can do better. And just one last reminder. Don't think that we're neglecting the Day of the Vow that was celebrated yesterday. Yesterday, I'll just repeat this one more time in case people are just tuning in. The 183rd anniversary of the Day of the Vow, the Battle of Blood River, when the Voortrekkers faced insuperable odds. I mean, if you just, they were outnumbered. I've heard Simon Roach said as high as 35,000 crack Zulu troops attacked. I can never remember. I think I'll say 470, 480 Voortrekkers, and the Voortrekkers beat them without losing a man. They killed so many Zulus that the Nkome River turned red with blood, hence the name Blood River. They celebrate the day every day. Yesterday was the Day of the Vow at Blood River, but we'll be celebrating that. Don't y'all worry. We're not going to let that go. Because after all, this program here was Blood River Radio was started for Blood River Radio. What do you know? To honor the Voortrekkers of Blood River. Anyway, people, so I just want you to know that before we go back to our precious guest. And Miss Nancy, I get so enthralled into the show. I can't remember who was talking last. Was it you, Sister Nancy?
Yeah, Nancy was. Yes, sir.
Well, I think I've covered, I was just talking about how accidentally this German man came in while I was speaking, and we were able to help him. Even though he had no idea that we were doing anything that day, but it was just kind of one of those things that happened. So it was quite, just like everybody has these things happen, I guess, in a lifetime.
I need to ask Gene something. Gene, how can people, that you're talking about, that's a hell of a lot of work up there in the museum, in the forest. How can they people that want to donate to your cause up there, Gene? Give them the address how they can send donations to the Forest Home to your projects you're working on.
Well, to go to this project, we had to set up a separate bank account over in Chapel Hill. The money that was being sent to SCV National, they just sat on it, and they wouldn't let us use it for the construction project. And I think there's some legal something there. If a person donates to a nonprofit and then the nonprofit won't use the money for what it was donated for, I think they're walking on some shaky legal ground. But anyway, that's what happened, because they brag that we own the Forest Home. National SCV owns the Forest Home. Well, I hadn't seen but one person from National ever get out there and work at the place, and most of them on the General Executive Council didn't even know where it was. But anyway, if they want to donate to that and make sure that it goes to the Forest Home, they can send us a check made out to Forest Hall Construction. And they can send it to me at my home address, which is 309 Timberdale Court, and Timberdale is all one word, Nashville 37211. And I will put it in that account, and we've got an account that has to have 2 signatures on it, so we can't siphon off the money. So it's Forest Hall Construction, send it to 309 Timberdale Court, Nashville, Tennessee, 37211. And that will go into that county, and that will absolutely go to the Forest Hall construction project. We've already spent about $8,000 that have gone into that account, and it's down to about $300 right now. So, that will definitely go to that construction project.
And people, if you didn't get that, just send me an email. It's very hard. Eddie@BloodRiverRadio.com. That's Eddie@BloodRiverRadio.com. Any information you need, if you didn't get that, what Gene said, if you need any other information on how, asking how you can get funds to Gene and the wonderful project he's doing, just let me know, and we'll expedite your request and your donation.
Anyway, so that's guaranteed. That's going to go to that building project.
I would bet my life on
that account.
Gene's one of the few people that I would stake my life with. Very few people.
We've got to have the corpsman and the medics out there covering us. That's for sure.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll shoot I like to say, I've been there and done that, but I hope I don't ever have to do it again. But if I had to, I would. But anyway, before we run out of time, Gene, this is really on subject, but you sent me a text, an email not long ago. We were talking about something. And you talked about some of the wonderful things that Saint Abraham Lincoln did. Give the people a quick history lesson of what he did.
Well, all these conservatives say, like Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly and even Tucker Carlson, they say, well, Lincoln saved the Union. No, he didn't. He destroyed it. He destroyed our constitutional republic and replaced it with a socialist dictatorship. And he ran the war as a dictator. There were over 30,000 people in the North that were arrested during those 4 years, 1861 to 65, and thrown in jail. They never had a writ of habeas corpus. They never brought charges against them. And they never actively supported the Confederacy. They just spoke out against the war. They weren't blowing up railroad bridges or cutting telegraph lines or doing anything like that in the North. They just spoke out against the war. And as soon as they did, bam, they went right to jail. He had over 200 newspapers and periodicals shut down. The Yankee soldiers would come in, arrest the editor, smash the presses so they couldn't print anything else that was contradictory to what Lincoln wanted. His Secretary of War, Edwin M. Stanton, anybody that questioned the war effort and what they were doing, it was costing too much money, costing too many lives, why not just get rid of the South, let them go? He would tell them, all I have to do is ring that bell, and I can send you to a place where you will never hear the dogs bark again. Hmm. And so this was the wonderful government that we had running the United States during that time to force the Southern states back into the Union and make them a. And people say, well, why do you fly that Confederate flag? You know, we're all Americans now, and I always point out to them, we are, but not by choice. We're here. We're in the United States at the point of a gun. And we voted to be a part of the Confederate States of America, and we had close to 290,000 of our soldiers killed, and probably, maybe they don't know for sure, but around 10,000 civilians were murdered. And this wasn't collateral damage. An artillery shell fell short and hit the civilian area. They were literally murdered one or two at a time by the Federal Army down here. And so, you know, it wasn't a lovely reunion that we're so glad that we made such a horrible mistake and we're so glad to be back in the Union. No, we were forced to be a part of the United States at the point of a gun. And I can remember my mother and my grandmother, this was back in the 50s, they never said Abraham Lincoln, they never said President Lincoln, they said that old Lincoln. That old Lincoln did this. That old Lincoln did that. And this is in the 1950s. And, of course, I wasn't going to question my mother for sure. I'd had enough run-ins there. You did not question her at all. So I went along with that.
Lost cause.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
One of the heartbreaking things, of course, people like us who know a little bit, at least I'm going to say myself, know a little bit about the Southern history. The heartbreaking things are that, for example, in the state of Mississippi, right after the war, almost a fourth of their state income went to the purchase of prosthetic arms and legs.
Yes.
heartbreaking, sickening, disgusting.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
That we are being ridiculed. And I always use this as an excuse. When people talk about the poverty of the South, I say it's a damn Yankees did it, and they made the South poor for 100 years.
Yes, absolutely. At least 100 years after the war. And the policies they had, the railroad policies, the long-haul and short-haul railroad policies, it kept the South in poverty. We were an agricultural colony of the Northeast, that's what they wanted. They could rip off all of our natural resources and pay very little for it, and came down and stealed all the property. I got a call one time from one of these, you know, real estate groups to go to Hilton Head for two days, three nights, something like that, whatever. And I said, no, I wouldn't go for free. And she said, well, why not? It won't cost you any. Well, I knew I'd have to sit there and listen to all this real estate stuff about buying a condo or whatever. And I said, no, because that land on Hilton Head was stolen from Southerners by the Vanderbilts, the Carnegies,
wow,
the Rockefellers. And they came down here and bought up land on pennies on mm-hmm. the dollar after the war. And because the South was so impoverished, and the Yankee Reconstruction government, they would put high taxes on people's property that was just impossible to pay. And, of course, they forfeited their property. They couldn't pay the property tax. And they took it over, and then they sold it to these rich people that made money off of the war. And they had the money, and they'd come down here and buy up huge tracts of land, timberland, farmland, coastal lands, and build these huge mansions because they paid practically nothing for the property. So that's not, I've never had any respect for the Vanderbilts and the Carnegies and the Rockefellers and J.P. Morgan and all of them. The land they got in the South for their winter homes was pretty much basically stolen from Southerners.
Sure.
That's it.
That's right. And, you know, another thing that burns me up is people do not know the history of Arlington. They don't know that it was actually Robert E. Lee's, and it had a lot of connections to George Washington, and they looted the house. And I even wrote to the government one time to ask them, how did they get those George Washington archives? Of course, nobody's going to be honest about it. They sold them out of the home that was Arlington. And now Moses Ezekiel, ooh, who was a fantastic sculptor, and sculpted that beautiful Confederate monument at Arlington, and he's buried underneath it. They want to remove that. And I
they're
going to
tear it down, just get rid of it. Yeah.
I did a lot of research on Moses Ezekiel. He worked mainly in Rome, and I actually found out where he was buried before he was buried underneath that monument. He was buried, he was a Jew, but he was buried in a Catholic cemetery because he had very close friendship with a Catholic poet. Well, he was an Italian poet, and his mm-hmm. Wife was American. And anyway, it's a long. I won't go into all of it, but I did.
Yeah,
I
but
did
you know
find,
who Moses Ezekiel was before that? He was a cadet at VMI.
Yeah, he fought
in the battle at Newmarket when the cadets charged that hill and went through that field of lost shoes, that muddy field, and pulled all their shoes off when they were going up that hill, and overran that Yankee battery. And he also did the sculpture for VMI, Virginia Mourning Her Dead, for those eight VMI cadets who were killed at the Battle of Newmarket. He did that sculpture as well.
People here do not know, and I have lived here all my life, people here don't know that the Thomas Jefferson statue, which is right in downtown Louisville, right in front of our courthouse, was done by Moses Ezekiel.
Now, I didn't know he'd done that one. I know he had
done something else, y'all.
I'm
going to tell the audience.
He did the one at Charlottesville, too.
Yeah.
Don't send your kids to a Christian school because, you know what, they're going to learn the same crap that they're teaching in the public schools. I can tell you, my grandson went to a hardcore Southern Baptist school, and they taught that Lincoln was he's next to God Almighty. So you're wasting your money if you're sending your kids to a Christian school. I know you're trying to keep away from the darkies. Don't tell me you're going there to because of good Christian education. Anyway, y'all, what a hell of a show. Thank you so much, Bitter Ender. Thank you so much, Sister Nancy, coming on. Y'all are just a treasure. You really
always an honor to be on a show with Nancy. That is an honor.
Thank you.
I'm honored with both of y'all. Thank you so much, Sister Nancy. Thank you much, Brother Gene. Thank you so much, Cameron in there tonight, Jay and Little Lizzie. Thank you, Blood River Radio audience. We will be having a probably a recorded show Christmas Eve. But it won't be new. It won't be a rerun. We're going to record a show. Good night, everybody.